Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
April 22nd, 2019. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Raw Reaction here on the ChairShot Radio Network. I am your host. My name is Harry Broadhurst. Joining me, as per usual, the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero.
What up, bitches?
And the line in the sand, Andrew Belaz. Tony, did you enjoy your vacation last week?
No.
Why don't you go ahead and fill everybody in why you missed the show real quick, and then we'll let Andrew talk, because I accidentally cut him off there. My bad, Andrew.
A little bit of this, a little bit of that, mostly work involved. But I did watch Raw eventually.
Well, and for those wondering, because we said we would update everybody at the beginning of this week's show, so that way you can follow along at home if you're interested in doing so, although I don't know why you would be. Tony gave last week's Raw a 6.5. Balor and Andrade was his favorite match, which is horrendously ironic now in hindsight, because neither of them will be qualifying for the end of the year awards here on the show. Least favorite moment was... I'm drawing a blank.
I don't fucking remember. That was last week.
Your MVP was Andrade, though. I remember that. Because I remember pointing out to you that it was a clean sweep across the board for the three of us. Funny how that works out, isn't it, Andrew?
I mean, kind of. It was hard for that not to be one of the worst points of the night, though.
Wait, what are you referring to?
The fact that you said it was a clean sweep. So, you know... reason it was a clean sweep.
Jeepus. Anywho, Tony, do you know what next Monday is?
No. What's next Monday?
It's our birthday.
Oh, nice.
The Reaction turns 5 next Monday. Plans are in the
works
for a very special show. Stay tuned. Tony will be drunk, which is basically status quo, I believe, around these parts. He will also not be wearing pants.
Now that is status quo.
That checks out. All right, so one other quick thing before we get to Raw, because usually we kind of BS about personal lives here. Tony, you're always talking about TV shows on here. You're always talking about stuff like Breaking Bad, Walking Dead, stuff like that. I finally watched Game of Thrones for the first time over this past weekend.
Mm-hmm. Like all of it?
I can see what the fuss is all about with regards to the writing. I don't know if I'm invested enough to actually pick up the show, though. Is it one that you've ever gotten into? What are your thoughts?
Andrew, Harry saw boobs on TV, now he wants to watch again.
I was going to say, that's all that whole fucking show is. If you really like the story, read the books. Fuck the show. It's pedantic garbage.
I have a rule where I can't watch something if there's a book attached to it without reading the books. I've read the first Game of Thrones, and it took about 7 months, and that's a long time in Tony time. So it's been very hard for me to pick up the second one. And because of that, I have not watched the show, with the exception of, I believe, maybe the first episode. But, I mean, the point that you're trying to make is that anything is better writing than WWE, and I agree.
What
Andrew,
took you so long to get through
the
first book, Tony? Oh, yeah, I tried to watch the first season. I think I got 3 episodes in, and I'm just like, oh, it's murder tits, and that's all this fucking is, and it's a giant derivation and slap in the face from the fucking book. So I'm like, this is sensationalized garbage that's just boiled down to the base level for everybody to consume and think it's good. Fucking hooray. Yeah. So I hate it.
And midget.
Suffice to say.
It doesn't sound like you hate it.
Yeah. And
no,
when it comes to the series, I'm only wondering why it took you 7 months. Cause I think I breezed through the first 3 books in about 3 months. And the problem I have with the 4th book is Martin decided to break up book 4 and 5 as the same story, just told from different perspectives, which is how all the books are. But all of book 4, save for like maybe 1 or 2 characters, are the like tertiary garbage characters that nobody likes. So
yep.
It's literally like watching Raw most weeks, and I can't read that kind of a book.
Yeah, no, I read multiple books at a time, and when I was reading Game of Thrones, I was also reading Harry Potter, and I think I was reading The Dark Tower by Stephen King, and I think I was revisiting The Great Gatsby when I first started the first book. So it was just kind of on the list of, you know, it was number 4 on a list of pretty great hits. So it's not really their fault or Martin's fault as much as it is mine, but I just haven't revisited it. And this year I can't, because if I'm on my trek to get 75 books by the end of the year, picking up a 1,000-plus page book is probably not going to help.
Oh, true. But I think you'll like the pacing and everything of the first 3. It's once you hit Feast of Crows that you will want crows to literally gouge your eyes out.
I would want crows to feast. The first one was fun. I enjoyed it. It just took a long time because I was reading other books at the time.
Fair enough.
I tend not to read a ton unless it's about wrestling. Like,
I'm reading
a lot of the wrestling.
I'm reading Ric Flair and
Go ahead,
Charlotte's
Tony.
Book right now. There's a lot of
No. I've not,
glorifying
I've,
things
I've not
in that
started.
Book, and you could totally tell it's not Ric Flair writing.
I've not read Second Nature yet. I'm currently working on Hardcore History, the completely unauthorized story of ECW. And then after I finish that, I'm going to go back and revisit Eric Bischoff's book, Controversy Creates Cash.
Fair enough.
I also have R.D. Reynolds' The Death of WCW to get to as well.
What about the one that Bischoff actually likes? So that what is that? The Nitro book, I think, is what it's called.
I don't actually have it. I don't own it. I got Death of WCW for Christmas last year, the anniversary edition.
Oh, I gotcha. I think Bischoff finds that wholly inaccurate and garbage. That's the only reason I was asking you, because I know you like the whole historical aspect and to be as accurate as possible. So I was curious where your stance on Nitro book was.
Yeah, I'm going to end up, as soon as I get through The Death of WCW, I'll probably look into getting a copy of that Nitro book, even if it means renting it from the library for a trial basis to determine if it's something that I'm going to want to read the entire book of. But I imagine that it'll eventually be something that I add to my wrestling book collection, because I have a lot of them. I feel like Tony would be happy to know that I actually do have a copy of Crazy is My Superpower.
That's good.
And you can
now
check out your review of that
Tony
book where, Tony?
Yeah, the review of Crazy is My Superpower was written in record speed and time. It's on 411mania.com. Actually, if you Google my name and AJ Lee, various things will pop up that might surprise you. Actually, nothing would surprise you.
I'm pretty
sure
one of the things that pops up is a restraining order.
You'd be surprised. I think she's okay with it. Crazy is her superpower.
That's true. She'll invite it just to fuck with you.
With that all being said there, you have our taste in literature, television shows, as well as Tony's excuse for not being here last week. Let's actually get to the reason we're here. Let's get to tonight's episode of Raw. We are in Des Moines, Iowa, and frankly, we should never go back to Des Moines, Iowa, because this crowd fucking sucked.
I thought that they were fun in a, you know, kayfabe wrestling fan outlook. They booed the bad guys. They cheered the good guys, you know?
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't really find anything wrong with the way they acted. They acted more old school normal, and that was kind of refreshing. I kind of enjoyed it.
Well, it's more in regards to, like, the Japanese nature of the fans and that they were very quiet during the matches.
Which I'm completely okay with. As we've established, I like the Japanese stuff.
Maybe because the show was boring.
Let's not go that far.
Well, they did have to sit through two Baron Corbin matches, so I kind of felt bad for them for that.
Oh, yeah, I meant Baron, not boring.
Baron. There we go. It was Baron of Entertainment.
If I had a rim shot on my sound cue right now, Andrew, you would be getting one for that.
Thank you.
Okay, let's get to this here. The show opens with the music of Triple H. He is then immediately interrupted before he can say anything by the music of Seth Rollins out in his home state. Not his hometown, you doofus announcers. He's from Davenport, not Des Moines. Anyway. Triple H and Seth proceed to make okay in the ring because apparently they're cool again, despite the fact that Triple H was the authority and Seth was bucking the authority a couple of years ago and they never really resolved it. Whatever. Anyway. They talk about the fact
that...
That's
won the Mania match. That squashes it. Come on, you know that.
They talk about the fact that in 27 days we have the Money in the Bank pay-per-view and that we will be crowning a number one contender to Seth Rollins' heavyweight championship. Now, this segment would have been made a whole lot more effective if they actually hadn't told us the six men that were going to be in that match right before the segment started. Instead, it becomes revolving door of WWE microphones as Samoa Joe, AJ Styles, The Miz, Baron Corbin, Rey Mysterio, and Drew McIntyre all come out and interrupt proceedings, eventually leading to Triple H saying, yeah, let's get this show on the road, and we have our opening contest. I'm going to go all four of these segments in a row here, but I'm going to break them up by the individual segment. Tony, what did you think of our opening?
Oh, no. Did Tony die?
I think he might have.
Hey, sorry, guys. I switched again. Headset. Yeah, that was a complete waste of time. First of all, what was Triple H doing there? Not that he can't be there, that he's not allowed, but typically you see him suited up, you assume some type of big announcement of some sort is going to happen, and it didn't. So it felt like a waste of his presence, if you will. Then you have Cole announcing that there's two triple threat matches coming. Now, we could make excuses. We could say that none of these guys knew that the match was booked, but if your match is booked and you are aware, why would you come out to make your case? Why would you – me personally, if I was booked for a triple threat, I'd be chilling and catering, eating a piece of, you know, pie or something, waiting for my match to come up. Why do I have to go out there to explain why I should be in the main event? Why don't I just win the match? Why don't I just shut up and fight? Like, that's 2 to 3 of these guys' purpose out here. And then – and, of course, I'm not really bothered by this because I like the match itself – but AJ versus Joe versus Ray, not exactly new or fresh, you know? I don't know. I think that this was just a sign of how unorganized they can sometimes be. And if the rumors are true that they finished the script seconds before Raw, that's not something new. We hear that a lot. But this is one of those rare instances where you actually see it and you're like, oh, well, that's what happens when you're in a rush. You rush a show, you make little mistakes like this where you announce the matches. And then you have a segment like this, and you're just like, wait, what? It's not a big deal, and it wasn't, like, offensive, and it wasn't, like, angersome. It was just, well, that doesn't make any sense. And Seth knows he's got a target on his back. How many times has he been champion? Triple H doesn't need to tell him that. This is all, I don't know, that was a waste of, like, 20 minutes that we just didn't really need to go through.
Which is where I was going to lead into Andrew with here. Andrew, 19 minutes for this opening segment before we come back into the first triple threat match. And you got to think that on a night such as this, where the Major League Baseball season is back in swing, the NBA playoffs is underway, the NHL playoffs are underway, they're running the risk of losing a portion of their audience to all the talking, are they not?
Not, well, see, coming from that angle that you just gave us, no, because the casual audience needs a story to grab onto. They don't give a shit about, you know, Avalanche Mountain Bombs or flips or enziguris or flying forearms or chair shots. That's not what gets somebody to go, okay, wait, where is this going? Hey, there you go. Thank you. But, you know, they need something. So if something in the story, in the promo caught them, then that's a reason somebody will stop and go, oh, what's going on here? And sadly, I agree completely 1,000% with Tony that it was a waste of 20 minutes. Nobody said anything. And Triple H was completely useless in the proceedings. And the only thing it did to me is just expose Seth on the microphone again. Like, he's just, he's not, he doesn't command any kind of attention. He doesn't have a presence. He's just a guy. And it just comes off more and more of just like, don't talk. Like, at least in the ring, he's serviceable and, you know, he's entertaining. But, like, every time he opens his mouth, he just is so devoid of anything to really grab onto that I lose more interest than I usually would.
He talks like he's from Iowa or some shit.
Yeah, I know. Fucking Blaze. Go figure.
The opening contest is the aforementioned triple threat match between AJ Styles, Samoa Joe, and Rey Mysterio. And would somebody like to tell me how Rey is in this match after Samoa Joe choked a bitch out in like a minute at WrestleMania? Like, what the fuck?
He was injured. It's fine.
Wrestle Becky Lynch for multiple minutes. Wrestle. I'm sorry. I said that.
Sports entertained, Tony. They sports entertained us.
There were neither sports or entertainment with Alicia Fox tonight.
So we'll talk about
you
that match
that
later.
Every night,
don't
though.
Worry.
Well, tonight it was way worse.
Oh, no, she said way worse matches. She's had completely way worse matches.
Bro, she looked like a rag doll. Like, I don't, it was weird tonight. Maybe she was drunk. I don't know.
Maybe she wrestled
we'll
better drunk and R knew the trick.
Moments.
Speaking
of
Alicia Fox,
I don't want to talk about it now.
17 minutes and 48 seconds, AJ Styles picks up the win, pinning Samoa Joe because, of course, Joe had to eat the fall here. When he Styles clashes Rey Mysterio onto Samoa Joe. Andrew?
I mean, it kind of was covered in my little rant earlier about, you know, people not really caring about flips and shit. Like, it was a fine match, but just too much. Not a whole hell of a lot of storytelling. The avalanche mountain, double mountain bomb thing that Joe did to both of them in the corner was awkward, overly, wow, I just totally blanked on English. But, like, it just seemed like they were working together too, obviously, in certain spots. And I don't know. Like, I wasn't into it. I kind of zoned out at some point because the match really didn't grab me. Like, it was okay. It was good for what it was. But it was mostly just spots, and that just didn't do it for me.
Tony, what did you think of our first triple threat match?
It was the better of the two, wrestling-wise, but not necessarily story-wise. I think that the first match, as well as the Ricochet match, was proof that you can have a good match, but if there's no real investment, whether it be by crowd, writers, or audience, then it just kind of falls a little flat. Because we've all seen good wrestling, okay? We know what good wrestling looks like. But when there's not necessarily a story to tell within the good wrestling, it's kind of like watching someone make a meal, right? You know they can cook, you know they're good at it, but there's no, like, explanation. There's no reason as to why they're using this particular spice as opposed to another one. They just kind of make it, and then they put it on a plate. And then that's it. That's kind of what we got tonight with a number of matches. There was no real rhyme or reason. And what sucks is there was a legitimate reason. They wanted to be in the main event. so that they can fight for an opportunity to be at Money in the Bank. But it was just like the sense of urgency, everything was kind of minimized for some reason. And then you also have what you said, Harry, Rey Mysterio lost in like 30 seconds to Samoa Joe. Samoa Joe showed up on Raw with really no specific announcement or reason. So everything was kind of like, it's like getting halfway there and just kind of chilling. I think that was the disconnect with a lot of people from the audience, including Andrew, where you watch this match, like, that was a good match, you know? There was plenty to enjoy in terms of athleticism and wrestling. But no one's really going to remember it. We're not going to talk about this, you know, moving forward. Like, it just, I don't know, it's the perfect, if we were doing star ratings on this show, it's the epitome of, like, a 3-star rating match. Like, it's not good, not bad, they didn't do anything wrong. It was just kind of, you know?
The second triple threat has The Miz, Baron Corbin, and Drew McIntyre. And this is kind of where the story takes over a little bit more to Andrew's point from earlier. We see McIntyre hit a brutal-looking Claymore on Miz, and right as McIntyre is about to go for the pinfall, Baron Corbin comes out and shoves his former buddy out of the ring and steals the pin for himself at 15 minutes and 1 second. Corbin advances to face AJ Styles a little bit later on in the show, and I think gives us the tease of a possible McIntyre face turn. They are kind of low on upper-level baby faces on Raw at the moment. Tony, your thoughts on the second triple threat?
I think that this will lend more to the point of what I was saying just a second ago, where you can have good wrestling and no story and it might take you out of it, whereas you can have a match with Baron Corbin and have some story and it becomes something better. The Miz is a full-fledged face, and we saw that tonight, from sneaking out of the ring to just saying, like, nah, I'm not down, to taking on both of these big guys and looking good at doing it. He was a face in peril a couple of times, and he, like, overcame the odds a couple of times. And Drew McIntyre is a beast, and he was able to show his beastly side. It's those little things that he does that people may not realize are difficult until they actually try to do it. And Cesaro's the same way, too. Like, I challenge anyone who watches wrestling to lift someone up dead from the ground and suplex them the way Drew McIntyre does, or gut-wrench someone the way Cesaro does. You can't do it. I know I can't do it unless he's 5. You know, like, I can't lift a grown-ass man. and I'm in better shape than about 80% of the wrestling fans. So that's a slight other argument. But realistically, it's those things that we just kind of gloss over because we see it all the time. But when you see something like that, I don't know. I always try to give props and, you know, adulation to people that are capable of doing that. Drew definitely is. So, yeah, this match, I don't know. It wasn't as good technically as the first one, but it had more story in it, and I think that that kind of made it outshine the first match. And when you say that, you look at the people involved, you're just like, wait, what?
Andrew?
Oh, completely. It completely outshined the first one because there was story from the beginning where it was one baby face and two heels. The two heels have history. Everybody who watches fairly recently knows this. People who watch the fucking Shield thing know this. So they ganged up on him. It was fine. He ducked out a little bit. At first, you kind of thought maybe he's going back to old Miz where he's going to beg off and try to get him to fight each other. But then he tried to play smart and lure him out and do things. And he, as Tony said, fought from underneath the whole time. Then Baron Corbin's little, you know, sucker punch and just the exchange, and it was not even the verbal exchange, just, you know, Corbin grinning with a shit-eating grin like a fucking douchebag, and then Drew looking at him like, fucking really? Oh, okay, this is how we're playing this game. And that set a tone for the rest of the match, where Drew never trusted Corbin really after that. Miz was able to get his shit in a little bit because they were, you know, there was a divide. So it told a nice story that built to, well, Miz is just going to get stomped to, oh, there's a fissure. Oh, now Miz has a shot. Now Miz looked like a million fucking bucks with the it kicks and going back and forth between the running knees and his little lariat where he slides through the second rope and his springboard double axe handle thing that he does. It's just, he looked fantastic. And even though he didn't win, he got his ass fucking, he got his bell fucking rung by a Claymore off the fucking ropes. And then Corbin just slides in like the douchebag he is to steal this, the cover. It was just, that's professional wrestling. Like, you can like the arm bars and the tie-ups and the catch wrestling and the chain wrestling and all the technical shit. That's impressive within its own right. But without the story, it's just a bunch of dudes on a mat. Who the fuck can get into that? Like, the story is what sells it, and that's why this was so much better than the first one.
I'm going to agree with you to an extent. I think the overall in-ring work was better in the first match, but I do think that the story held this match together more cohesively than the first one did. Miz is definitely coming into his own as a face this time, which is not something we've said before on the show. I believe Miz was a face when we first started the show, when he was a god-awful one. But now with the feud that he's had with Shane, and hopefully we get to see that continue a little bit, because I think they have another decent match in them. I've actually enjoyed the WrestleMania match between the two of them. I feel like there could be another stipulated match between the two of them that could be entertaining as well to give Miz something to do, especially if Miz, as Shane gets involved at the same Money in the Bank if Miz qualifies. But as far as the match itself goes, yeah, I was really entertained by it. I found myself much more invested in this than I would a traditional Baron Corbin match. And I do have a question to ask you guys coming off of what we saw in this match here. Would you be okay with McIntyre as a face on Raw, or do you think you would prefer that he stay heel? Tony?
I don't care. I want him to be an interesting character, that's all. And I'm not saying, you know, that sounds like something Greg would say, but right now where he's at, I just, either alliance isn't one that I prefer over the other. I remember when I was helping run shows down here in LA, one wrestler told me that, like, it's so easy to be a heel. Like, you're just an asshole. It's harder to garner love and adulation from fans that is real and emotionally investing as opposed to just cheering because you're the good guy. I think Drew has the capability to do both. So I'm not really scared of him falling on either side.
Andrew?
Running the risk of sounding too much like DeMarco here, like, I don't think Drew needs to be pigeonholed as one or the other. Drew's, you know, 6'5", 6'6". He towers over most people. He's pretty sculpted when it comes to his physique. He's got a presence. He can speak. He can wrestle. He's got a finish that comes out of fucking nowhere, so that's always dangerous. Like, if he's just the big, dangerous man, like, he doesn't need to be a face or a heel. He just needs to be a big, dangerous man, and that's going to get over. That's why people risk him now. That's why I don't really think anybody really views him as a face, at least in the smart crowd. The smart crowd kind of just goes, well, why is he saddled with fucking, you know, deadweight Baron Corbin and fucking going nowhere Bobby Lashley? Like, people were more bitching about his booking than really caring about how he's positioned in a storyline. So that alone should prove McIntyre is a little above brand when it comes to heel face dynamic. And I'm okay with that. Just do him. Just whoever the hell he wants to pick a fight with, if it's somebody the crowd hates, if it's somebody the crowd loves, who gives a shit? Just beat someone's ass and fucking take a title along the way.
Your main event on the show was Baron Corbin and AJ Styles. The winner gets Seth Rollins at the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. I have to say I'm a little surprised that they're pulling the trigger on AJ Styles and Seth Rollins already, as Styles gets the win at 13 minutes and 5 seconds with a phenomenal forearm. Andrew, I'll go first with you here. Were you surprised to see Styles win, and what did you think of the match?
The match was good. I mean, the story that kind of leaked over from the last triple threat with Corbin, and then apparently there were some repercussions for Styles that they played into the story about him having some kind of lower body injury, and Styles sold it well that he couldn't pull off his moves right and couldn't suplex him or couldn't really get him up in position for the Styles clash, and it was like a desperation forearm. Like, there was a lot of good storytelling here. As for the finish, yeah, I'm a little surprised that they're going with the Styles aspect, but you also have to remember that we've got Saudi Arabia coming soon. So this could literally just be because Styles is a bigger name. So regardless of what happens at Money in the Bank at Saudi Arabia, maybe we'll get a rematch, or Styles will be, you know, in some kind of tag match with Rollins and someone, you know, like, I think it's just positioning so that the next couple big events have some star power at the top, and then they'll actually try to tell a cohesive story after that.
Tony, same two questions. What do you think of them going with AJ Styles already, and what did you think of the match itself?
Oh, I said a silent thank you to the wrestling gods above, because I really thought they were going with Corbin. I even tried to convince myself as to why it would be a good idea. I ultimately came up with, because people hate Corbin. You know, the mentality behind it is that Seth Rollins is going to hold on to the belt for a while. So having him face Corbin at Money in the Bank, although is annoying from our point of view, it kind of makes sense from a booking point of view. So I assumed they were going to go that route. Them not going that route did surprise me. But ultimately, if you have a match like Seth versus AJ and you think it's really, really good, how many times can you really complain about it if it were to happen more than once, you know?
Well, the issue that I see with that, Tony, is we saw that with AJ and Shinsuke 2 years ago. They kind of ran that match into the ground.
Yeah, but that was just bad booking as opposed to just bad wrestling. I think it really depends on the story. What are we getting here? As of right now, as of tonight, we saw two faces. But this could go anywhere. This can be, you know, they could do SmackDown versus Raw. They could do AJ turning heel. They could do Seth turning heel. They could do anything. I mean, they'll likely go for the worst possible idea. But at the very least, the door is open for creativity. It's just a shame that we have zero faith in their ability to do something with that.
Yeah, that's the problem, is the faith in the story. Because, you know, you remember Rollins and Balor and how they ran into each other, like, what, 6-7 times last year? And it was just redundant and basically the same match, so it gets old.
Redundant.
Hey! We now talk about the rest of Raw that wasn't affiliated with the championship title situation. Let's go to the women's tag team titles, as Billie Kay is in non-title singles action against Naomi, and yet again a champion gets pinned, this time in 1:11 with a sunset flip. I know you don't like the fantasy book, Tony, but if you were to guess, who would you have as Naomi's partner to take on the Iconics for the tag titles?
I don't fucking know, and I don't care. You know why? Because, look, Sasha, she has divided the wrestling crowd pretty big in terms of people who support her and people who think that she's a whiny little bitch. My personal opinion is basically she kind of has a lot to be upset about, and there's nothing wrong with that. So this is just more evidence as to why she's mad. I mean, look at what was, you know, two titles that didn't exist now do. Look at them. Look at who's representing them. Look at what just happened to said champions. We talked about how cool it was to see these two girls win the belts and cry and be happy about it. And now look at what we're witnessing. It's a slap in the face, not just to Sasha, but to you know, Billy and Peyton too. They're heels, so them losing isn't that bad of a deal. It isn't that big of a deal. It's not that bad, you know. But we've seen many, many heels with titles lose over and over again and look really bad. I don't know. This was bad. And also that promo, what the fuck? Who? Sorry, Corey, I'm going to have to repeat what you said. Who wrote that?
I'm guessing that was Dana Warrior with the Ariana Grande reference. Sounds like something she would try to pigeonhole into this show. Andrew, what did you think of Naomi and Billie Kay for all 1:11? You are on the clock. Go.
Maybe Mauro Ranallo wrote that one too, because, you know, he loves to just like squeeze in shoehorn random references, so that's good.
Mamma mia.
Exactly. They're supposed to be cringy when they do promos. It's part of the cuteness, I suppose, of their weird arrogance. And Billy's the weaker half. I don't care. Like, they're a tag team champion. They're not a singles champion. They lose in singles. it's fine against a former two-time women's champion. It was a waste of a couple minutes between the promo and the match, but I'm not mad.
You had 18 seconds to spare, Andrew.
What can I say? I'm concise.
Well,
fair
I'm
enough.
Mad.
We're staying succinct here on the show. Something creative could learn a thing or two about, especially for these damn opening segments. The
I want
triple
the title.
Threat follow?
No, I want the title. Give me what I want. Give me what I want.
The title.
What you really, really want?
Well,
yes.
I'll tell you what he wants. What he really, really wants. He wants the title. The title.
Oh, God. Stop
kind
it.
Of kind of delved into Nookie by Limp Bizkit there for a second. All right,
yeah, you did. You did. You went away from Spice Girls there.
All right. The Miz Triple Threat match followed the Iconics match. The very next thing to discuss here would be the Sami Zayn segment where he's continuing his anti-IWC character. Anti-wrestling fan, anti-IWC, call it what you want to. It's basically 601, half a dozen of the other here. Andrew, you were the most optimistic about this because you said that you felt Sami had the character chops to pull this off. We are 3 weeks in. What's your opinion so far?
I don't hate it yet, so that's good. Like, he pulls it off well. He kind of ends it with a you can go to hell kind of thing because that's actually offensive to some people. Granted, no one on this podcast, but, you know, it does actually probably elicit a real boo from some people because that's just rude. And the way he kind of runs down and plays back and forth, and it sounds like he's having fun. And I can't be upset with it because it sounds like he enjoys what he's saying, and there's a little bit of character in his voice as he's speaking. So I'm entertained. I don't hate it yet, but we'll see.
Tony, what did you make of tonight? Sami Zayn entertains the masses segment.
I'm offended that he says hell. I would much rather be told to go to heck. I feel like that's just good manners.
So
I mean,
when you
yeah,
go
that's
to the
manners
movies,
101,
are you
really.
See heck boy?
Yeah.
Okay, heck boy. Let's just try this again where we don't talk over each other. Andrew?
Yeah, what the heck?
I just said, so if you go to the movies, you're going to want to go see heck boy because hell is offensive.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Tony. Mine wasn't worth repeating. Continue.
No, yeah, he does well with what he's doing. It's Sami Zayn, so it's kind of, you know, par for the course. You know, one would say he's a little bit more than generic with his little promo. My ultimate question would be, like, who stops this? Who is the voice of us peons who, you know, like what? I can't think of a person that is readily available to stand up for our, you know, rights as wrestling fans that he's oh so hardly putting down.
Okay, first of all, in regards to the more than generic comment. God damn it! I lost my soundbite. Never mind. Second of all, I was wondering that same thing while he was cutting this promo because I was half expecting him to be interrupted tonight, and then when it didn't happen, I was surprised. I'd say maybe somebody like Ricochet, but we saw Ricochet a little bit later on in the show, and it looks like he's going to be starting something with Robert Roode going forward. The guy that came out immediately after him was Cedric Alexander, and that's usually a sign of things to come. I think Sami and Cedric could have some good matches against each other at the very least. Cedric is now officially on Monday Night Raw. And after getting pinned clean in the center, probably wishes he was back on 205 Live again. Losing to Cesaro is nothing to sneeze at. Don't get me wrong. We all know what huge fans we are of Cesaro here on this show. Cedric hits a tope code Hilo. Oh, technically he went over the top rope. So would that be a plancha? Would that be a plancha con Hilo? Andrew, help me out here.
I don't know. That sounds like
no,
something
it's still
I would a Taco Bell.
it's still a tope. Tope con heel and Giro go over the top rope.
Okay, very well then. As he comes back in, he goes for a springboard forearm, which he's been known to use, or not a forearm, sorry, the springboard clothesline that he's been known to use, and gets caught straight into the Swiss uppercut of death for the pinfall at 6 minutes and 25 seconds. Tony, we have officially seen the separation of the bar. Cesaro is once again a singles wrestler. Cedric Alexander is on Raw. What do you make of these two developments?
Sure, I guess. I mean, I think Sheamus is injured, so it's fine. This hopefully is a blessing in disguise to see Cesaro get a lot more love from, you know, the higher-ups, because the dude's got it, but also he's getting older. So, I won't say that this is a start of something great, but I will be very, very excited if it is. I think that they wanted to make sure that Cedric didn't look too bad, which is why they gave it some time. And I don't think that this loss is necessarily going to hurt him, because he's not a big deal anyway. So,
Andrew, same two questions. What do you make of Cedric Alexander finally being on Raw? What do you think of Cesaro now being a solo?
I mean, I prefer him as a solo. Anyway, the bar was great, don't get me wrong, but I'd still rather Cesaro get a legitimate singles push for Intercontinental or Universal or, you know, WWE, something bigger than US. As for the match, it's the classic big guy versus little guy thing. Cedric Alexander was big on 205 Live. He was actually one of the bigger guys too, so he could kind of power his way through. Cesaro ain't small. He put up a good fight, but it got to him. Like, Ali looked a little more impressive on SmackDown, because when Ali debuted on SmackDown, everybody was kind of smaller. Like, the main event scene was, like, Styles and Daniel Bryan and, like, it's Kofi Kingston. Like, they're all more cruiserweight size. So, it's the little guy versus the big guy thing, and Cesaro deserved a win, because, for fuck's sake, we need to stop jobbing at Cesaro. He's one of the best when it comes to in-ring technical ability, and he's actually an entertaining character. Whoop-de-doo, he's got an accent, but he still has the charisma and pulls it off well. So, you know, give Claudio a fucking belt.
I'm going to be curious to see where they go with Cesaro, especially with the rumors of a renewed push behind him. I won't believe it until I actually see it, but I'm hoping it does happen, because we could sit here and sing the praises of him for the next hour and a half of the show's duration and still not run out of ways to basically suck the dude's dick. All right, Tony's got to get going. Unfortunately, he has a prior commitment tonight. So, Tony, let's get to your final reaction real quick. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right, overall show score.
Yeah, I'm going to go with another 6.5. We had some good wrestling on, but it was just kind of blah. It wasn't that bad. It wasn't as bad as what we've seen before. But I think that this was hopefully a start of some, like, you know, basically putting their foot down on certain characters. Like, for instance, you know, Robert Roode. I mean, I think it's idiotic. I think it's dumb. But they're going for it. You know what I mean? And you got to kind of give them credit for hopefully just not pulling back on that. But then on the other hand, you have them changing the names of Viking Experience yet again to, you know, subpar teams in the NFL.
Don't you like one of those subpar teams, though?
I used to.
There we go. Okay. I thought I remembered that right.
He lives close to another one of them, relatively, a couple hours.
You still like them, too?
Who's your, what was your favorite match or moment?
Gonna go with the triple threat with The Miz.
Least favorite match or moment, Greg Watry.
Greg Watry definitely goes to Alicia Fox. That was bad. Everything she did was, every step she took was bad. Everything.
Who's your MVP for the night?
The Miz.
Thank you very much, Tony. I'll see you next week for the 5-year anniversary.
Now, before I go, I don't know if we're in that particular point of the timeline, but I got to hear you guys' thoughts on Bray Wyatt.
I was going to say the same thing. I didn't want you to leave before you said your fucking piece about that. Thank God we're on the same page there, Tony, because I was going to be a little mad if you left before talking.
Well, I believe the exact words that I used in one of the group chats that I'm in was Pee Wee Wyatt, which I think that they actually have a couple – I think they have a couple of ways that they can go with this. My thought process to it was it could be almost like a new age Waylon Mercy, which is what the Wyatt gimmick was originally intended to kind of be, that he's all fun and games, all happy-go-lucky, all Mr. Happy Times doing the faux kid show and everything. But then once the bell rings, he snaps. He loses it. It's a completely different character, kind of a la similar to the breakdown of a Robert De Niro character in Cape Fear.
Well,
Andrew?
Yeah, I see this more as giving him a nice reboot because people liked when Hardy kind of teamed up with him and nobody liked when he turned into the devil. And this was hilarious. Honestly, like I found myself giggling far too much about the whole thing like minutes after the actual thing happened because it was ridiculous. The fucking buzzard, whose name is Mercy, so I guess that's the obvious nod right there. The witch, and then him taking a saw to the fucking old cutout of him, and his gloves that say, like, what the hell was it? Like, fear and hate or something like that? Like,
hurt.
Oh, my
and
God. What? Like, it was so ridiculous that it was fantastic. And the best part is it hits you out of nowhere. Because you didn't know what the fuck it was. You went from one wrestling match to now Firefly Funhouse. And you're like, is this a commercial? And then fucking Bray Wyatt walks through. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? And it was fantastic. Like, hopefully they can continue the momentum because I think they have something here. But I'm tickled. I enjoy it.
Tony?
I thought it was the dumb. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, if anyone could pull anything like this off, it's Bray Wyatt. So I'm really not concerned or worried. Also, the alternative was him coming back as the Bray Wyatt that we already know. And I'm pretty sure that would have got moans and groans too. So there's going to be a lot of people, you know, saying that it's dumb and blah, blah, blah. But this is one of those things where we've only had one instance of it. So you really don't know where they're going. From what we know about Bray Wyatt, the man, he's almost always really locked into his characters and what he's going to do with them. So, you know, as much as people would say that they didn't understand his promos, that people must not know words, but everything he said always made sense. It was just empty. You know what I mean? Like, it made a lot of sense. It just didn't work within the confines of his particular storyline that he was involved with anyone, really, you know, because he didn't have that white good against his dark evil, you know. It was one character, you know, versus the wrestling. It's like Mankind stuck out, you know, for a particular reason. But also he had some other characters to work with that were in the same, if you will, as him, whereas Bray Wyatt didn't really have anyone. So. Yeah, so he didn't really have a soundboard for all of his nonsensical promos. Now we have a whole new outlook on him, and I'm excited. I'm cool with it. The comment section in the Raw report was not very happy. They thought it was stupid and idiotic, but I can't agree with them because we have no idea what's going to happen. And with that, I bid you all adieu.
It's your line at
least. Praise clues.
Deuces, bitches.
And on that, I tell Tony. Damn it, I just scrolled past it.
Dag the fish.
All right, so it's just us now, Andrew. Yeah, overall, to Tony's point here, I think that there are multiple ways that you can take this, and I trust Wyatt to be able to pull them off. Because of how in tune he's been with the character here. Like I said, I got kind of a Pee Wee Herman vibe, but it's like Pee Wee Herman meets Norman Bates, if that makes sense.
Oh, it makes complete sense. And I've seen plenty of dark comedy, kind of twisted humor stuff, you know, and this falls right into that kind of category, especially since when he was talking, I don't know how you took it, but he flipped a little here or there. Like, he went from being bright and happy to there were those dark moments, like when he put the gloves on, he didn't know it was going to go on, and when he pulled up the chainsaw, you heard the old Bray Wyatt kind of slip back out, and then he tried to, you know, butter it back up with the happy-go-lucky whatever the fuck Firefly Funhouse thing is. So I think there's that's already alluding to the old Bray isn't gone. He's just really trying to keep it down, like he just got out of AA kind of thing. So, like, it could be fun. And then if we do get the old-school Bray Wyatt after maybe 6 months or a year of him doing this and just slowly devolving back into the character, that would be fine, I think, because he just needed a fresher outlook, a reboot, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, basically, this could be construed as almost something of a soft reset for the Wyatt character. Buy or sell the Waylon Mercy thing.
I don't think so, because I think the extent of that reference is with the Buzzard's name. I don't think he's going to snap mid-match, but you never know. Like, they could do that. We'll see. Like, I'd be more interested if we just get more vignettes or whatever you want to call those, like, you know, like a Pee-wee's Playhouse or like a Mr. Rogers Neighborhood. That would be fantastic if you had, like, Bo show back up as, like, the Cowboy Curtis or like the mailman kind of character, and just, you know, everybody starts freaking out, or he like, you know, they play up the children's kind of show thing. I would be really amused by that.
Now I want to see Mr. Wyatt's Neighborhood next week.
See, don't you? It's fantastic.
you son of a bitch. All right, let's get back into the episode of Raw at hand here. The Usos backstage talking about the Raw Tag Team Division. First of all, I want to give special credit to Jay for his snide little shot at Jimmy. I thought that was very funny.
Oh, yeah, the drinking and driving one. That was good. Plus how he sold it, just staring at him. He's like, fuck you.
They also proceed to call out a couple of the other minor league squads on Raw before the Revival confront the Usos, thus setting up what is probably the best tag match the WWE is capable of right now.
No argument.
We'll see if that ends up happening. Hopefully they let it be a big deal, because if you give the Revival and the Usos 20 minutes on a pay-per-view, you have a show stealer in front of you. The Viking experience. Wait, message in the headset. No, not the experience. The Viking Raiders come to the ring and are supposed to take on the Lucha House Party, but instead proceed to beat the Lucha House Party's ass, thus immediately becoming Andrew's favorite tag team.
That is exactly what I was thinking, because as soon as I saw Lucha House Party was on it, I'm like, well, I'm going to have to bring the score down by a half a point, and the match didn't even happen because the Vikings just pillaged the shit out of the Mexicans, and I was a happy puppy. What can I say? Though, I'm annoyed that they changed the name of Thor's Hammer to the Viking Experience, just because they had to get that in there somehow. And
Vince is like, it's going to stay, god damn it.
Yeah, like Vince is stubbornly like, no, we're keeping this. I'm like, fine, change Thor's Hammer to fucking Viking Experience. Ugh. At least they didn't change Fallout's name. Okay.
Overall, though, you approve of the Lucha House Party taking a non-Lucha ass-whooping?
Oh, of course I do. Fucking A. That was wonderful.
Kurt Hawkins and Zack Ryder were watching the Viking Raiders beat up the Lucha House Party and collectively shit a brick. They tried to play it up like they didn't shit a brick, but they definitely shit a brick.
Accurate.
Becky Lynch comes out to talk about Lacey Evans. Lacey comes out to talk to Becky Lynch. I get the whole the Southern Belle and the man thing, the kind of paradox involved there. I just have no interest in this match. I know you like Lacey more than most.
She's good.
I would say you like Lacey more than most, though.
Perhaps, but that's also because most people just want to write her off because they don't like the gimmick. And I think that's the problem with a lot of IWC perception, is if they don't like a gimmick, or if they quote-unquote don't like the booking or the finish of the match, then they just shit on the whole thing. The way that everything is framed in this match, I like the juxtaposition with the Southern Belle lady and the man. And it works itself well into a decent length promo. I'm not promo, feud, angle, whatever you want to call it, just to get us to something bigger named whenever they figure out who's on what fucking show, because apparently the shakeup is still happening this week.
Alicia fucking Fox. You know, I thought we were safe once Nia went out with an injury. I thought we were going to pick up in the women's division on Raw. Nia wasn't around to hurt people. She wasn't around to drag all of the air out of the room. Tamina's kind of fucked off with her, which is completely okay in my book. And they bring back Alicia fucking Fox. 8 minutes and 2 seconds of something an NXT talent would be ashamed of. What the fuck? Andrew?
It's Alicia. Like, what do we expect? Like,
goddamn apologies,
overly
man.
Botched. There is no apology. Nothing was, like, botched. She didn't hurt anybody. She just looks weird when she does anything. So, like, that just always makes the match awkward at best. But, I mean, at this point, and by this point, I mean the last year or so, ever since fucking Noam Dar was saying her name and she was screaming at a phone or from fucking projection or what the fuck it was, I think it's just her character. Like, obviously, they have her come out and do the same fucking thing, including the Zoidberg fucking, like, fucking crab fucking dance as soon as she walks in and drops her fucking coat and fucking skips up to the fucking ring. Like, at this point, it's got to be a gimmick, because things haven't changed, and she's just a fucking whack job. She sells her character fine. We all knew it was going to be a job match. Who the hell else do they have as a jobber in the women's division? Because they're trying to do something with Dana, apparently. So you can't say Dana.
Well, she did. Dana did pick up a win on Main Event, spoiler alert.
After getting buried by Sam Roberts on commentary. So, like.
Okay, speaking of which, Sam Roberts can fuck the fuck off, too.
Why?
I just generally don't like him. It's the reason that some bitch is ginger. It's because God doesn't love him either.
I mean, I don't disagree, but you do realize that he's just playing up that IWC smart fan who just shits on everything, right? Because the first couple pre-shows he did, he wasn't quite as smarmy and dismissive. And then he started this a couple pay-per-views ago where he was being the dick and McAfee was supposed to be the fun-loving kind of casual fan who'd make a joke.
The thing with Bianca Belair back at NXT TakeOver, I remember.
Yes. And that's where he started, like, this whole smarmy, smark kind of gimmick. And it's sad, but it's what you hear people say. Like, nothing he says has not been written or said in Facebook groups, on Twitter, you know, on Reddit, on message boards, whatever the hell you want to say. Like, I think literally he just trolls through the IWC, finds a couple gems of just ignorant babble, and throws it out there, and it pisses people off because it's incendiary, and it's a beautiful gimmick. Don't get me wrong. I don't like him either. I didn't like him before this because I just always thought he was annoying and just kind of lucked into being the WWE's chosen fucking podcast buddy. But, whatever. He's selling the gimmick well, and yes, I know you're biased to Dana Brooke.
I'm not especially a fan of Sam Roberts' show either. I don't really find the guy entertaining under a general aspect. I don't understand how he got the job with the company in the first fucking place.
Agreed.
But that's neither here nor there. An announcer should never bury talent, plain and simple. I don't give a fuck if it's a work. I don't give a fuck if it's a character. It doesn't matter. An announcer should not bury talent. Because the second an announcer were to try to step into that ring and do what the talent does, they'd look like a goddamn fool.
That's hyperbolic, though, because that's kind of like saying Simon Cowell can't judge singers because he can't sing himself. Like, there's a difference between
I disagree with that because I think Simon Cowell has earned the right as a producer to judge whoever he wants to.
Yes, but this is the position that Roberts is taking. It's the character. So I can't hold it against him when he's saying stuff like that because obviously he's told to say stuff like that. He doesn't just have free reign, even though it's main event and, like, nobody watches it. So I think it's leading to something.
I read about it.
Oh, so did I. And Dana Brooks piped back. And it's the most exposure Dana Brooks really had in a long time. You know, that people actually want to talk about her or feel bad for her because Sam Roberts is shitting on her and people just don't like Sam Roberts because he's naturally unlikable. So we'll see. Because there's been plenty of commentary people that bury talent. And some of them are just complete douchebags, like, think Mark Madden. And then other ones, like Bobby Heenan, can actually be funny about it. And then he basically ends up making a joke out of himself because starts flip-flopping and changing his thing and just looking dumb, but in a clever kind of funny way. And he becomes the ass of the joke. So we'll see where this is going. I'm not going to judge the concept after one show.
I can honestly not believe I'm about to say these words. You know who my favorite color commentator in wrestling is right now?
Who?
Don Callis. For the exact same reason that you just mentioned with Bobby Heenan. Callis has a very similar nature in that regard, where he can take a shot at somebody and then end up turning it around into a shot on himself.
I can't disagree with you, really. Like, no, I think I agree. I'm trying to think of all the color guys, and I'm like, no, I don't know of any other color commentator that's actually better than Callis at the moment. Huh.
Honorary mention to Nigel McGuinness in NXT.
He has his off days, though. That's my problem. Like, I'm starting to like Nigel more, but he definitely has off shows.
Post-match, getting back to the actual show itself, sees Lacey punch out Becky not once but twice after Becky kind of sold the first one like crap.
It's only a signature. It's fine.
In the end, Lacey stands tall, although Lacey did kind of screw up by saying that she was going to take both titles off of Becky. They officially established last week on Raw that the match was only going to be for the Raw women's title.
Plans
That's a
change.
Little minor nitpick. It doesn't mean anything in the grand scheme of things. A backstage promo from Baron Corbin. I proceeded to take a piss. I feel I was better for it. The next match is Ricochet versus Robert Roode. Him being back to Robert Roode is nothing spectacular. That mustache, however...
Glorious. You just wanted to do that.
And in the end, Robert Roode was...
Glorious.
With the implant DDT at 11 minutes and 18 seconds. Your sigh of exasperation tells the story as far as my studio abilities.
No, I'm amused, though. It's not bad. But yeah, I mean, what did you think of the match, honestly? I'm going to spin this on you first, because let me see what you thought first. Go.
Okay, so you just said in regards to my sound cueing there that you were amused because it was not bad. I think not bad would be the way to describe this match, but the problem is not good describes it as well. It seems kind of clunky to me. Part of it, I think, is Ricochet's used to being in a tag team right now because he's been teaming with Aleister Black now for like the last 2 months. And when you've been doing something as repetitively as tag team wrestling, it takes a little bit of time to get your legs back under you as a singles competitor. That being said, I think part of it also is let's face facts here. Bobby Roode, Robert Roode, whatever you want to call him, is boring in the ring. He's a somewhat effective character, but his matches have never been anything special. I take you back to the NXT Championship matches that he had back when the tops and the bottoms. Most of the considered worst NXT TakeOver cards have Roode as champion defending the title. His style is very methodical, and under some circumstances, I can appreciate that. Some people are actually able to take that methodical style and make it work in a modern era. Too much of a throwback, in my opinion. Andrew?
Yeah, but that's something that's nice about him, because people make the same kind of complaint about Randy Orton, that, oh, well, he's boring, or he's slow, or he doesn't, you know. It's a safer style, and it's very throwback, old school, like you said. You wouldn't see, you know, Arn Anderson do flips or, like, really, really speed things up. The only thing that makes Arn Anderson matches easier to watch, which is something that people that want to do the old school kind of method have to do, is notch up the intensity a little bit. Like, little things where, you know, if you're going to duck a clothesline, Arn Anderson would step in and then duck, not wait for his spot to duck. Or when he's going to deliver something, he'd step into it. He'd actually add some intensity and some oomph instead of literally just standing flat-footed waiting for the jump, the duck, the, you know, whatever the fuck the next movement is. So that's something that's been lost. But that spinebuster Robert Roode did was beautiful. Did
yes,
he ground it?
The
Ricochet was pretty nice.
I will agree on the spinebuster. The fact that Ricochet went up to try to leapfrog Roode and Roode caught him in the spinebuster was very nicely done.
And it's little things like that. That's what's the entertainment factor to Bobby Roode. It's like a lot of his moveset is throwback. A lot of his moveset is like Anderson, because he was the Canadian enforcer on Team Canada and fucking TNA. So he kind of adapted a lot of the Anderson kind of mentality and moveset. So when you see that's where you pop. That's where it's like, okay, that's cool. And he still moves really well for being 41, 42. So he's one of the older guys on the main roster still. And we have to kind of remember that. I agree. It was not bad, not good. Kind of like as Tony put earlier in the show, like if we were doing star ratings per match, a 3-star match, because it's just kind of like right there is okay, it's fine, it's passable, it's average, it wasn't great, it wasn't bad. But I'm more just surprised they gave Bobby the win, because
Did you just spoil your rating for this match in Andrew's weekly Raw and SmackDown reviews over on thechairshot.com?
I mean, I might have spoiled one, maybe, just a little bit. More reason to listen to the show in case we start doing things like that.
Just wanted to take the opportunity for a cheap plug there. Sorry.
Hey, that's fine. Because the other cheap plug works that if you want the full entire rundown of the ratings ahead of time, is to go to ChairShot's Patreon, which is Patreon.com/TheChairShot. And then you can find a whole bunch of podcast extras, articles, and all of my ratings ahead of time before I post them onto the ChairShot. So, boom.
I'm waiting for the day that Greg approaches me and goes, yo, any chance you want to do something for the Patreon? And I'm going to be like, maybe.
And then he's going to be like, but if it's a review, it has to take you less than 3 weeks to write it.
Well, okay. In my defense for United We Stand, last week was Christine's birthday and girlfriend Trump's wrestling review.
I'm aware. I'm just messing with you. That's all.
We did get Progress Chapter 4 up over on thechairshot.com, however. Ha! My own plug.
Ha ha, there you go.
All right. The reason we're doing all these cheap plugs and stuff now is because after the Ricochet and Bobby Robert Roode match, I turned into Michael Cole there. I keep calling him Bobby. After the Ricochet and Robert Roode match, it was the Firefly Funhouse and then the main event. So we've officially covered everything on the show.
Yay!
So I do have good news as far as that United We Stand review goes.
Okay. Dish.
I have less than 40 minutes left of the show.
So that's...
And it is looking like it's going to be one of the longer reviews that I've ever done for the website.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you were telling me that one a little bit.
I'm trying to cut it down a little bit as we go towards the end. You told me yourself that the main event is nothing special, so it's not going to require that much writing. But I know I'm going to be invested in Monsters Ball because I like both participants. And I hear that Swan and Flamita, despite being relatively short, is actually a pretty good match too.
It was, yes. I agree.
So, and Flamita is somebody I'm going to have to get used to anyway because I'm going to be seeing a lot more of him when I continue my journey into Progress.
Fair point.
Because eventually Flamita and Bandito show up in Progress Wrestling as well.
That's a good point. Hell, that was the main reason why I watched Defiant Wrestling this weekend.
The Loaded tapings? The Loaded TV show
The Lights Out IPPV, because Pac, Neville, whatever you want to call him, wrestled El Fantasmo. And El Fantasmo has had a few video segments, hyping his debut in New Japan. And I don't really know his work too well. So I figured, screw it. You know, I had access to it. I'll watch it. He wrestles very similarly to Phoenix.
I was going to say, is Fantasmo Cuerno?
No. You're thinking El Hijo del Fantasma, the actual luchador.
Okay.
El Fantasmo is a British kid who's, you know, whiter than we are. And he's a good high flyer. He's got kind of like this weird raver kind of mod squad, almost kind of look. But it's British. I don't exactly know how to describe it. But he's impressive because, like I said, he runs the ropes similar to Phoenix, Pentagon Jr.'s brother.
So, Legaro for a new generation in terms of British wrestling.
A little smoother than Legaro.
Fair enough. All right. Thoughts on Cody versus Dustin being announced for All Elite Wrestling's Double or Nothing pay-per-view. Is that a match that you're going to want to see?
It's the only thing that actually finally hyped me for Double or Nothing. Like that they got my money there. As soon as I saw that video, I'm like, you motherfuckers. Because I kind of thought it was coming because there was a little bit of a rumbling, and then Dustin changed his name on Twitter and tried to get ahead of it. And he goes, I'm going to change my Twitter name. Don't look into it. It's nothing. Don't worry about it. And then that kind of already made me go, oh, I see what he's doing. And now that they finally did it and he's doing some kind of different face paint, it's cool. So, yeah, I'm interested now.
They did a couple of the teases, too, with Cody on being the Elite about his opponent finally being available.
Oh, yeah. No, I've been watching Being the Elite and most of the Road to Double or Nothing kind of stuff, so... I was like, I just not super impressed, not super intrigued. Pac versus Adam Page doesn't do anything for me. Lucha Brothers and Young Bucks, it'll be fine, but it didn't do anything for me. And then what? Jericho Omega 2. Slightly interested to see if Jericho gets his win back. How they're gonna book that? But you know, but no, it's the Cody Dustin that sold me.
For those wondering how we're getting to AEW's Double or Nothing, you can check out my review of All In coming soon to thechairshot.com. And then once Double or Nothing happens, you'll be able to check out Andrew's review and star ratings over on thechairshot.com as well.
Indeed.
I may try to get to Double or Nothing as soon as I can. I know that kind of need me to get back into Progress because we're getting close to what's in the queue, so I need to kind of bulk up my resume there a little bit. So the plan is to knock out United We Stand. As soon as I'm done with United We Stand, I'll get started on Homecoming because Rebellion is like 13 days away. Oh, shit, Rebellion's this Sunday.
Yes, Rebellion is six days away.
Shit! I thought it was 2 weeks. It's one. Damn. All right, I'm going to have to get on that real quick. But luckily, it's on the GWN app now, so that should make that a little bit easier rather than having to go through alternative means. And then
true.
Once I get through Homecoming, I'll get started on All In as well, because I'm planning on doing the WGN America exclusive pre-show 0 Hour as well.
That
okay, I think that's in the conversation.
SoCal Uncensored and the Briscoes was good.
I mean, I'm a huge fan of Christopher Daniels, and anything that Daniels' boys are involved with, I'll be interested in seeing. I like Scorpio Sky. I'm kind of indifferent towards Frankie Kazarian.
Well, for the 0 Hour, it's Scorp and Kaz,
because Daniels takes on a Mel at All In. Yes, I'm aware.
I'm just making sure you remember what the card was.
Okay. I think that's enough conversation about things that aren't Monday Night Raw for tonight. Hey, sometimes you got to get yourself through the dreck by talking about other wrestling. All in all, not a bad show tonight. We'll get into the specifics for that here shortly. Let's get to it now. What do you say? It's time for the final reaction?
Let's go for it.
All right. Favorite match or moment tonight, since I screwed up and didn't lead with this with Tony?
Favorite match or moment? I'll give it to Miz, Corbin, and McIntyre.
I'm actually going with the Cesaro and Cedric Alexander match. Despite the fact that I don't necessarily like this match being booked, because both of these guys probably needed wins in order to establish themselves on Raw as singles competitors, the match itself was really entertaining for the 6.5 minutes that it lasted, and I think that there's potential for kind of an extended thing here, even though I do believe that Cedric will be Sammy's first opponent.
Possible.
What about your Greg Watry for the night?
Greg Watry was sadly that whole Iconics thing. Like I was saying to Tony, like, I get the fact they're supposed to be cringy. That's built into the character. But the fact that the last, I don't know, couple months, the crowds just die. Like, they don't boo. They don't react. Like, there's no sound as they're doing their shtick back and forth. That's not a good reaction. That's not a good look. Like, they need to find something to freshen that up a little bit.
I'm going to agree with Tony here and say Alicia Fox, because, like I said earlier, that was an NXT-level performance, and not the good NXT, like the touring brand NXT level. The Florida touring brand, not the national touring one.
Damn. All right, so real quick question. Alicia Fox versus Aaliyah. How many stars does Meltzer give that match?
Can we dust ourselves off and try again?
Fine.
Ha! Pop culture reference! Granted, it was a decade and a half ago, but fuck it, I got one in.
I was about to say it's still a little dated, but, you know, I'll give it to you. Not bad.
I think Tony would appreciate the fact that I made an R&B reference there.
He might. I doubt he'll listen to the show, but, you know.
It might be my first in the history of this show, too.
Hey, you worked with the Aaliyah reference. So I'm happy for it. That worked itself out very nicely. Good job, Tony. Harry.
It's been a long fucking night. All right, let's move on. Speaking of
it was a Tony-level pun, too, which isn't a bad thing.
And that's as awkward of a segue as I could probably come up with here. I have never heard you drop as many F-bombs as you did describing the Alicia Fox match. How was that not your watchery?
Because I've grown to expect it from her. And people react the way they're supposed to. And like I said, I'm not sure if that's her character or not, but at the point that they've been doing this shtick for the last couple years and it doesn't seem to change and she's still put in the match, she doesn't hurt anybody. It just looks, it's hard to wrap your head around because they don't give her enough TV time to really know what the fuck is going on with her. or what the fox is going on with her, whatever you want to say. But, like, I just, I don't know.
All right, overall show rating.
I actually gave the show an 8.
Wow. Okay.
Oh, yeah. It was good. Actually, better than good. Pretty more English. So leaning towards really good, like just in-ring work was really good there. The storylines were fine. The fucking Firefly Funhouse just popped me way harder than it should have. And even the stupid shit, like Alicia being Alicia, like I'm fine with that as the squash match just to get us to another Lacey cheap shot and to, you know, that whole thing getting more heat. That's fine. The Iconics need a match, I guess, and they're never going to put on a 5-star classic. So I guess that was kind of like the outlier that I can just kind of be like, all right, we don't count that. Like, you know how in school you'd have the couple professors or teachers that like X out your lowest grade and just take the average of everything else? Well, that's kind of what I do with that. I'm like, I'm just going to overlook that. And we're going to grade the rest of the show. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I was actually enjoying the entire show. And then the Bray thing, just fucking stupid fucking fun house. But, yeah, so 8.
I landed right with Tony at a 6.5. And the reason I went 6.5 is because we've had this conversation many times. I'm a huge fan of in-ring product, and there was a lot of storytelling done tonight through the in-ring product. You mentioned specifically the Miz Corbin McIntyre match. There was exactly no storytelling in the AJ Styles Rey Mysterio Samoa Joe match, but it was still very entertaining. I liked the Cedric and Cesaro match. I liked the main event. I thought that they told a good story of AJ coming back from underneath in that match as well. So the in-ring product was on point tonight. There were a few things here and there that I wasn't a fan of. Obviously, the Alicia Fox-Becky segment, the Becky Lynch and Lacey Evans interaction as well, because I don't really care for Evans as a challenger right now. But there was enough good to justify the overall of the English. There was enough good to outweigh the bad in justifying my higher-than-usual show rating. Apparently neither of us can English today.
I know. It's one of those days.
Then again, I lost 7 days somewhere, and I'm not sure how.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Fucking the 28th is 13 days away, folks. Figure that out. Fucking math.
Math was my best subject, too. That's the worst part of this. All right, who's your MVP tonight?
I'm going to give it to Bray, just because I'm still tickled by that, just talking about it. Shut up, bitch. I don't know why I'm so just tickled by the whole fucking thing.
I was waiting for you to say that, because the way you were gushing over the segment, I was like, yep, might as well just write this in now.
Uh-huh, yeah.
I went with AJ Styles. Two very good individual performances in both of his singles matches. And out of the 6 people that interrupted, I thought he handled himself the best on the microphone.
Oh, yeah. I mean, honestly, if that segment didn't happen with the Firefly Funhouse, I would have been probably torn between AJ or Miz, just because I thought Miz did a lot of storytelling in his match, and he was what was driving the intrigue of most of that one. So, yeah, I don't really disagree with you or Tony, because I think Tony picked the Miz, but like stupid fucking Firefly Funhouse. Fucking A.
I do believe you're coming up on a full year of doing the show with us now, a year and a half almost now, right?
Yeah, a little more than that. A little more than a year, because I think I started with you guys exactly on the first last year, because the first was a Monday.
So you've been around for approximately 20% of the show.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, approximately.
We'll elevate you a little bit because you have the 3 months here. You've been around for like 22% of the show.
Math.
There is a reason.
Are you just proving you can math
there
to make up for the impact thing?
Yes, 100%. Yes.
Okay.
Fuck it. If nobody else is going to pat you on the back, Barry Horowitz, and do it yourself.
Fair enough.
The reason Tony's referred to as the Down Since Day One co-host is because it was April 28th, 2014. Just Tony and myself on the very first episode of the Raw Reaction. The Reaction turns 5 next week, and I have several plans in place to surprise Tony with during the course of that show. You'll get the opportunity you'll get the opportunity to hear a couple of the surprises yourself as well. That'll be right here next week here on the Raw Reaction. Do we have anything else to add before we get out of here?
Yes. Yes, there's only one thing I need to add. So, the Reaction turns 5 on 4/28. And you know that's next week. And you know Rebellion is 4/28. How did you think that was 13 days away?
Because I actually looked up the 420. I found the 4/28 date when I went searching through Facebook and found it in my memory.
Okay.
That I did the first episode on 4/28. I knew the anniversary was coming. I knew the anniversary was coming up. I wasn't sure of the specific day.
Oh, that's fine. Okay.
No, I screwed the pooch on that 13 days thing. I'll eat the bullet on that one.
I just thought it was funny that it's the exact same day.
I became the walking equivalent of an Alicia Fox match.
So we don't know if you did it on purpose or not.
Freaking pop at each other on air.
Isn't it fun?
I think that's kind of the point of doing shows like this, though. It's not so much the entertainment that we get from the show. It's how far can we push the other person over the edge with our humor and or lack thereof.
Correct.
You're either going to make them laugh or you're going to make them yell. It's Conrad Thompson theory.
That's more yelling, though. Sheesh. But, yeah. So, all right. It's getting a little late here, so we should wrap this up.
Yeah, right on an hour, almost an hour and a half, so let's get out of here. So, once again, next Monday night, join us for the 5th-year anniversary edition of the Raw Reaction. All 3 of us will be here. There will be a couple of guests. I won't give names yet. I also have something else that I found in my email that I'm going to surprise Tony with as well. And since I know he's not listening, I'll tell all of you guys listening at home and Andrew right now. I found the original Raw Reaction theme song. I will play it at the start of the show next week.
Oh, boy.
It actually has all of the theme songs for Monday Night Raw up until Nickelback.
So we end on Nickelback. Oh, that's going to be a great show.
Look at the bright side. We can only go up from there. I actually like Nickelback, so whatever. Send all hate mail to hebtheeagle@yahoo.com. Screw it.
All right, now it's definitely
too
late. There you go.
He's Andrew Balazs. For the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero, I'm Harry Broadhurst. You have been listening to the Raw Reaction here on the Chairshot Radio Network, online at thechairshot.com. Talk to you guys next Monday for the anniversary show. Have a good one, everybody.
Tragic play. Only curtains remain to fall. There's no reason left to stay in this place. We move backwards against the wall. Conversation's over. Communication's there.
The sounds of Plan 3, once again, with Still Broken. This has been the Raw Reaction on the Chairshot Radio Network. Join us again next Monday night as Harry Broadhurst, Tony Acero, and Andrew Balazs bring you the Raw Reaction here on the Chairshot Radio Network, online at thechairshot.com. Thanks for listening, everyone. 5 years. Here's hoping for another more. I don't know how many more. I don't know how much longer they're going to be able to put up with my shtick. But here's hoping for many more. Talk to you guys next Monday night.